conundrums came up.
I have a conundrum. May I?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Who are you?
I'm Nora. With a conundrum. So, in the meditation instructions, you said something about being as you are. Something like that, right? Being as you are. So, I was having a state as I was that I didn't care for. And I struggle with that. How to be as I am when it's not what I want to be. Will you please answer that?
In time travel while you're
out. Well, what did you do? How did you work with that?
I didn't really. Sometimes I can, sometimes I can't. But it's something that I'm noticing in my day-to-day life. More often. So I'm a teacher, and the last week of school was really hard. The students were just crazy. And I found it very difficult. And I found myself being fussy and wishing I wasn't. But wishing I wasn't going to change it. So trying to relax how it was really hard because I didn't think that's how it should be. So it's a conundrum.
What do people think about that? What Nora could do or what you do when you're in similar situations?
I think some of us live our lives like that.
Yes, I think
you are how you are. That's not how you want to be.
Yeah.
I grabbed one of my little table side Buddhist writings and flip it open to a page and read, and somehow every time I just strikes a chord and I feel better. But sometimes I forget to do that, and then I really suffer for a while, you know. And I go, I give it up. I give it up to a higher being or the universe. I'll just read something. And it works for me. If I can't identify why I'm really cranky or not happy, you know, can't always identify it. All the little details of things that happen during the day.
I've always sort of looked at the situation as this opportunity to change, and that self-love that we were sort of talking about, that if it were a friend that came to you and said, I'm really struggling with this, what would you tell them? Relax, mm-hmm. It's going to be okay, tomorrow's going to be better. Nothing lasts forever, but we don't. We internalize it, oh my God, you can't stop that. Which just makes it worse.
I think that's a trick. because often we're much kinder to our friends than to ourselves. Mm-hmm. So if you could sort of just step outside and think, well, if I was my friend, what would I do? What would I say? And there's some hope for help.
That's a good idea. Because I would be nice to my friend, probably.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
So if we're, just to hone in on that, what you just said about being kinder to others than we are to ourselves, does that ring true for other people?
Most of the time.
I think there's it's certainly easier for me to feel compassion for others than it is for myself. But in the big picture, I'm pretty damn kind to myself. I mean, you know, on a daily basis, I feed myself. I make sure I'm clean. You know, I make sure I have the clothes I need to go out in the weather. I do all these things to make sure I'm comfortable, or to try to be comfortable. And so if that is kindness, I'm actually more kind to myself than I am to others. Mm-hmm. I don't have any kids or anything. I don't take care of anybody. Mm-hmm. If that's what kindness is, then I think I need to work on trying to be more kind to other people and worry a little less about me.
Mm-hmm.
It's perspective. But
mm-hmm. Well, the Sakyong has this book called Ruling Your World. Has anyone read it or seen it? And isn't there a chapter in there called The Me Plan mm-hmm. in the beginning of the book?
Yeah.
Where he sets out this idea that the me plan, taking care of only oneself, is the root of all of our suffering. So, what's the difference between the me plan and contemplating loving kindness for yourself?
Well, I think if you are lovingly kind to yourself, it gives you a better ground to go out and do it to others. It's more genuine. I mean, if you're sitting at home beating yourself up, but you can be kind to somebody else, then there's some kind of falseness with your presence in the world. I mean, you may be genuinely kind, but you might not have the ground to be doing it if you're not doing it to yourself. I kind of feel like it starts where it's a real thing you're doing for yourself that is, it arises in such a way that you can go out with it. And I just feel like when you don't do it to yourself and you go out, I don't know.
It's like an avoidance, maybe.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's like, you know, maybe a double standard kind of thing or something. It sounds like.
Well, if you don't do it to yourself, you don't really know what you're, like, giving to the person. Like, if you can be kind to yourself and treat yourself to something, you understand the experience and why it's important to give that to someone else and why it basically brings joy to your life and how it can affect others in that same sense, I think.
I think most of us, we aren't just not kind to ourselves. Our internal voice, we would never talk that way to someone else. We would never talk to another human being the way we talk to ourselves in our head. And that's a big part of society. So I think it can be separate from ego. I think you can separate your ego from kindness towards self and love of self. It doesn't have to be egocentric.
I think a lot of it is like the me plan that he talks against is all about poverty. Like, I lack stuff. And if I only could get this and this and this, then I would be complete and I'd be happy. Mm. Except it doesn't work that way, because then you find seven other things that you also need. You know. Whereas, if you can reach a point of just sort of, it's hard to say this, but just sort of like recognizing that you are already enough, mm-hmm. then you can get out of that game at that point.
Yeah, because if it's someone you love, they are enough. Uh-huh. You know, even with their faults and stuff, they're enough. You
exactly.
love them.
Uh-huh.
But with us, it's always, you've got to change this, you've got to do this.
Yeah, you'll put up with a lot from other people. Yeah. You know, yeah.
And yet, a lot of times I find that I'm just complaining to myself about my faults. I'm not really... I don't know how to express it. It's kind of a hobby in a way. I can spend quite a bit of time complaining to myself about all these faults that I have, and the faults remain, and I'm not being kind to myself by doing that. I'm just reinforcing that behavior, and I think that habit carries over, like you were saying, that if you
like Carolyn was saying, and Emma, if you have that habit of judgment, it's everywhere. Mm-hmm. You take it with you everywhere. And I was thinking about the line in the sutra, cultivate a boundless mind.
Yeah.
Without obstruction. And it's the opposite of what I usually do. My mind is usually so limited to whatever habitual pattern is going on right at that moment.
Well, it's like that hobby is kind of comfortable in a yogi way.
Mm-hmm.
And boundlessness.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I sometimes feel like, well, that's what I should be doing. I should be criticizing myself because I have so many faults. Well, then I need to be criticized.
Right. I can realize that. I mean, I think there is an underlying theory that's misguided. But I mean, the theory is, if I could just point out my faults to myself, then I would say, oh, well, then I don't have to do that anymore because that's a mistake. But in fact, you don't. It doesn't work that way. So you keep on doing it, and then you keep on criticizing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You're just trapped. You're not making any progress.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe one time out of 1,000, you do see something that you've done wrong and say, oh, that I should not do that, and set it aside.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time, you're still trapped in the same pattern.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like sometimes when you create those obstructions for yourself, though, it's not even really you focusing on yourself. It's like, you're focusing on, I'm not happy because I haven't done this, but I can see people around me who have done this. So you're really, it's not even a real obstacle if you're taking in the mind that, like, you don't have to be that other person or that. You're creating these own personal sufferings for yourself by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's...
Because, I mean, I never, like, go around saying, oh, I can't do this because I just know I physically can't. It's because, oh, I don't know anyone else who can do this either, so it's different for me with that, I think.
I think the criticism piece is, you know, it's related there, that if you knew what your friends were going through inside their head, all the criticism, and you would do an awful lot to help them not do that, but you won't do it for yourself. that's a quite shocking realization.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of weird too, because like, it's different helping someone else than yourself. Like, you have to really think about, oh, what makes me happy? And then it's like, does this really make me happy? So I don't know.
I see a big difference between the sutra and the contemplation. And during the contemplation, the entire time I kept thinking, I don't really want to be out of danger. I don't really wish that for myself. I don't wish for physical comfort for ever. That's not something I wish for. I wish that I could mentally remain stable during those things while they're happening. But this friendliness to me is more about acceptance for the way things really are than the contemplation to me seemed to be wishing for a lot of things that will never happen. This world, we live in alternation, and we need to learn to deal with that, and wishing for that alternation to stop is unrealistic. And the best lessons I've learned in my life, the reason I am who I am is because I have suffered. I would not get rid of any of the suffering that's happened in my life this far.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is easy to say when I'm not suffering, but I look forward to more. I find it to be, it's an adventure. There'll be a time in my life and I'm like, I don't want the suffering, for sure. You know, I know that, but it's that challenge. And I don't wish that away for me, and I don't wish that away for other people. Bruce Lee said, don't pray for a better life. Pray for the strength to endure the life you're having. I think that's kind of how I feel about it. In the contemplation, I kept thinking, well, I don't really wish this for me. I want to be kind to myself, but not in this way.
Not in that way. Hmm. But in the contemplation, you also said something about that in the midst of bad things, mm-hmm. that you would have peace.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of, I know exactly what you're saying. That's what kind of stuck with me is, oh, yeah, that would be really nice.
Right, so the part with physical pain, if sickness or injury comes, may you receive the physical pain with equanimity and practice in such a way that this pain is a support for peace in your life.
Right.
May physical pain not lead to mental torment.
Because it is all about what you do with what happens to you, not what happens.
Something that was related to this that's been, I've been doing, I took a couple of courses in nonviolent communication, and now the instructor is offering a practice group for people who've taken the courses, and one of the things she asked us to do at the first meeting was to try to think of a time when we had experienced unconditional acceptance and how that felt in embodied feeling. I couldn't think of a time when I had experienced that. So it seems to me really related to the contemplation and the friendliness in a little in different ways. If you are an open, if you are totally accepting of what is in the present moment, then you cannot be judging and criticizing at that time, at that moment. You're there, you're totally accepting. And then you have greater understanding, I think. You have greater, I don't just mean intellectual understanding, maybe more like, I don't want to say realization, but more presence, more awareness. And so I think when I experience like this, when I'm judging myself, I'm kind of standing back and looking at myself in a supposedly objective way. Of course, it's not objective at all, but that's the sense that I have. You know, there's that, she's doing that again, oh my God! And if you are able to be in that moment completely accepting, then you are that person in that moment, not standing apart from yourself and judging yourself. And that can't happen if you're going to be completely accepting and present in the moment. So it was kind of an eye-opener to me that I couldn't think of a time when I had experienced complete acceptance in any situation in my life. And I think it's kind of a condemnation, really, of the culture I was raised in.
But could I speak to that? I was in that class too, actually. But I think there's two different kind of flavors of unconditional acceptance. One is like the way a dog looks at you and wags its tail. I mean, that's unconditional acceptance. And then the other is like what Lee was talking about, where you have a human being who sees perfectly well, you know, that you're imperfect and doesn't care. I mean, they love you anyway, you know. And so it's not stupid, unconditional acceptance. It's open-hearted unconditional acceptance. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of what is going on.
But I think if you that you can't feel that for anyone, including yourself,
uh-huh.
if you're focused on judging, mm-hmm. it can't happen. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of shocked to realize that I couldn't think of any time that I had ever not been judged or judged myself. Mm-hmm. Just by implication, you know,
yes.
not.
Yes.
And would you say you've experienced unconditional acceptance before at this point?
Would I say what?
Have you, so since that happened, how long ago was that?
Monday night.
So in these past 3 days? where do you want to go with that now, then,
you know,
as a practitioner?
The closest I could come to in that unconditional acceptance was the year that I went to the Sangha retreat. It was the year that Sakya Nipon had come back from his year-long retreat. And as I was thinking about it, I think the thing that was so inspiring about that retreat was that he had unconditional acceptance for himself. And he was completely open about that. And so when he said to us, 250 of us sitting in this tent, "I love you all," you could believe him. And so then I thought, that was the closest I think I've ever come in my life to that sense. And it was a bodily sense of unconditional acceptance. And so it inspired me, really. It inspired me to try to remember that and in moment to moment.
Mm-hmm.
That unconditional acceptance, if I have it for myself, then the fruit of that is love. Fruition, I guess. Fruition is the word.
Maybe your shamatha practice, Carol, could be all about that from mm-hmm. now on. It's just, that's...
At least part of it, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you do Shambhala meditation, and the first part is, mm-hmm. well, what is your feeling? What is your deep inmost feeling? And my struggle with that is, I don't know. I really, nothing, a lot of times, nothing comes up. So I realize that I'm, not only am I not, not only do I not have a boundless mind toward all beings, I don't have a boundless mind, I don't have, you know, there's something blocked and shut off and small that's what I'm experiencing, and so that's what I found the contemplation. I mean, I agreed with Lee to some extent, but I found the contemplation helpful because it was something specific that I could focus on and say, well, do I wish that? Is that something really weird? Do I feel that in mm-hmm. myself? Do I wish that? So it's an opening. It's a door to knowing what I feel and experiencing what I feel and being able to try to have the boundless mind.
And Pema tells us, like I said at the beginning, that we should regard the sense of obstacle or resistance or the sense of I can't do this or how do I do this as like part of the practice. Like discovering those things about ourselves is necessary in order to progress along the path of loving kindness. And that to me is like this huge teaching, because I always think that when I do it, I have to jump from the way I am to this great mind, mm-hmm. you know? And she's saying, no, you just kind of feel where you are, and mm-hmm. you notice, you identify that part of yourself that does feel a little bit tender, something soft, something a little bit open, and then you just kind of stay with that, and it grows by itself. Mm-hmm. And along the way, you notice fear, loathing, pride, and all these things. And instead of kind of just trying to cast those off and get rid of them, you just kind of include the whole thing and be like, notice, okay, I have that too. And you keep your mind on that seed and it just grows by itself.
If you had a boundless mind of loving compassion, there would be no need to meditate. we don't meditate because we're already there, we meditate because we're getting there. Mm-hmm. And to think I'm doing this wrong because my mind is not boundless, it's silly, because you wouldn't be meditating.
Yeah, it's not necessarily that I think I'm doing it wrong, it's just...
hard to do.
Yeah. It's hard to feel it. And I think, I don't know about any of the rest of you, but I grew up in a family where stoicism was the way to be. And it's very hard to get rid of that habitual pattern. Mm-hmm. If you think that the way to live your life is by not feeling things, then when you start to try to feel things, it's really challenging.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I agree. I find a lot of the ideas around unconditional acceptance, on any level, is difficult. Because it's, for me, it becomes kind of an abstract thing, mm-hmm. or it's very intellectualized. But mm-hmm. the one thing I have found recently, coming maybe directly from shamatha, is this idea of kind of giving myself just a little bit of space, just kind of saying, backing off a little bit, saying give myself a little space to make a decision, or to see things as they are, or to not have to change, immediately. And that whole idea of just a little bit of space, I think, that's kind of what I would do for the guy driving in front of me. I'd get off his bumper a little bit, or, mm-hmm. And it's that kind of kindness that I thought, okay, I can understand that part a little bit, just doesn't have to be the full acceptance of who or what it is I want to be or think it should be, but just a little bit of space around where I am. And I found that maybe as a first baby step toward mm-hmm. Not tackling it all in one bite.
Mm. And it seems like it's really related to the instructions I remember so much from the early levels of Shambhala training about slow down.
But you actually said something really profound, and I don't know if you realize it, that what you just realized about yourself, the stoicism, is something that most people will go a whole lifetime without recognizing in themselves. Mm-hmm. That's a huge realization. I mean, if you realize that that's where you've come from most of your life, that's what you're made of. That's in every cell of you. But as a recognition now, you've reached a point where that can change. Mm-hmm. That's a big deal. Mm-hmm. That's really, really cool. It's hard, but
yeah,
that's a big realization.
Yeah, Carol, thanks so much for sharing that.
Yeah,
thank you. It's really,
you also said something that struck me right after that, when you said that you're not boundless, mm-hmm. or that I don't feel it. Yeah, you don't feel it. But something about right when you said that, I thought, well, that's funny, because you are so boundless. Yeah, I sort of feel like Tim, it's like an intellectual realization, but I don't feel it as an embodiment in my life.
Right.
I wish. I think that's one of the things I would like to have in the contemplation. I wish I could have the boundless mind.
But maybe you do. Maybe we do.
I think we do, but there's these habits. Your habit thing really struck me. Mm-hmm. I think on some level, the boundless is just too much.
So it's kind of more exciting or more whatever comforting to have these habits.
That's a little limited.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
That could just relax into our boundlessness.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the opposite of what I started with earlier.
It sounds like you've got both going on.
Yeah, I'm really boundless and relaxed.
That's
kind of mean.
Well, we can probably wrap up at this point. And thanks everyone for your contributions and nice ideas and insight and your heart. Thanks for coming out on a rainy evening.
Thank you, Charlie.
Yeah, you're welcome. Maybe to end, we could sit up straight for a moment.
We have
announcements. Okay, let me do this first. Okay, so then let's just take a moment to feel how this practice and discussion has affected you. Just kind of notice feeling in your body. Texture of your mental status. Feel your heart. And let's aspire that whatever peace, whatever goodness, whatever insight was developed here tonight, that we let go of that, let that kind of go out in every direction and affect the world in positive ways to enhance peace and well-being for everyone. And announcements.
I think the only one I know.